plot to undermine, diminish, and destroy democracy.
This is a plot to diminish and destroy democracy. That was the voice of National Urban League president and CEO Mark Morial delivering this year's State of Black America report. There, he was talking about our system of elections and the peaceful transfer of power, two things that really frame the democracy that we live in here in the United States, but two things that have often come up short, especially with regard to African Americans and the rights that we enjoy alongside our other brothers and sisters in America. Voting rights in particular have come under attack in recent years from the right, especially since the 2020 election, but not just since that pivotal moment. There has been a real effort to kind of roll back voter access, voter ease, as the numbers of black and brown people in this country who actually show up and try to exercise their right to vote has been growing. Morial says it's not just the big lie or right-wing media channels that are chipping away at our democracy. He says bad actors have been using their power inside government to diminish voting rights and suppress the vote for years, of course, before Donald Trump was the president of the United States. And Morial joins us now to talk about that and his view of the state of Black America in 2022. Mark Morial, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you, and good morning to your listening audience.
Yes, yes. So before we dig into the content of your speech and the issues you bring up, I want to start with the really interesting history of the Urban League State of Black America speech. Talk about how this tradition started for your organization.
Yeah, this is, thank you. It goes back to Vernon Jordan's presidency in 1976 when he heard President Ford address the nation with his State of the Union address. Jordan noted that there was no mention of the challenges that Black America faced, no mention of civil rights, no mention of the deep recession or poverty or the great disparities. It was as though Black America did not exist. But Jordan said, I'll do my own report. And thus he pulled together a group of scholars and experts, and they put out the first State of Black America report in 1976. We've published it since then. When I joined the National Urban League a decade or so ago, I added to the State of Black America report a statistical index called the Equality Index, which gives us really a baseline measure of the social and economic conditions of Black America versus White America. And then this year, we have a singular focus in really to go in depth. And we like to take a topic each year and go in depth. This year, it's democracy, it's voting rights, and it's this plot to destroy American democracy, because I believe it is a plot. And it is an effort to chip and chip and chip and chip away at the very foundation of this nation.
Mm. So you say that in a lot of ways, this report on the state of Black America is a speech about the state of America. I think that's a really artful way of talking about the role that we as African Americans play in America and how the fate that we are experiencing, or in some cases suffering, really says everything about America itself.
You know, Black Americans represent 45 to 50 million of the over 300 million Americans. Black Americans represent 1.5 to 2 trillion in spending in the American economy, over 10,000 elected officials, and we set trends in culture and in fashion and in music. We are the working class in many communities that, but for our participation, economies would not grow and would not sustain themselves. And so we are intertwined into the nation. However, we are targeted all too often. In this instance, the targeting has been by right-wing bad actors who have targeted our participation in American democracy to find sophisticated and sometimes not so sophisticated ways to diminish our participation. And it really, really took a turn with the election of Barack Obama. After Barack Obama's election, I think is when this plot was hatched. Mm-hmm. The Tea Party was a visible component of it. But behind the scenes, there were right-wing and conservative lawyers plotting legal challenges to the Voting Rights Act. There were right-wing policy, if you will, people who were plotting an effort at the state level to get state legislatures to roll back, if you will, the right to vote in many ways. Voter ID was one early tactic, closing polling places, voter purges, making sure the formerly incarcerated couldn't vote or the barriers to their vote were so high. Look at Florida. Even after the people of Florida voted 60% to give the formerly incarcerated a right to vote, the Florida legislature created erected a set of barriers completely inconsistent with the vote of the people. So this is a plot. Mm-hmm. And along the way, there are many, 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 many chapters.
And let's talk just a bit about the history here and how we know this is about race. Often when I have this conversation or an argument with people who are talking to me about voter security and voter fraud, which of course doesn't really exist, their insistence is that this is not about race, that this is not connected to the nation's historical disdain for black voting rights, which, of course, only really have had the force of law for about 50 years. But talk about why we know.
Well,
go ahead.
So an immediate reaction is I'm fed up with bogus arguments.
Yeah, yeah.
There have been at least half a dozen federal courts which have found that states like North Carolina, for example, engage in intentional discrimination. These are now court findings. This effort is littered with intentional discrimination. It's littered with efforts that are racially directed and motivated. And this is another example of what I call a cover story. Mm-hmm. Let's create a false narrative. False narratives sustained segregation and institutional racism in this country. The false narrative was that black people were inferior, didn't have the ability to serve in important positions, even when they were educated, were not responsible. That was the false narrative that sustained second-class citizenship for black Americans for centuries. Now it's become a lot more sophisticated. Show me the fraud. Show me where this is about integrity. It is not about integrity. It is about an effort to deny certain people the right to vote in large numbers. And that is what it is fundamentally about. So I think we have to counteract and call the question. Yeah. If you say it's fraud, show me a scintilla of evidence. Show me a minutia of evidence. Identify a single case. Show me where what you're doing is directed at fraud. And I think we have to call the question on these bogus arguments because they do not hold water. Why we thought it was important is because much of this has happened underneath the covers, behind the scenes, where these actors have said, we'll quietly go to all these legislatures. We'll quietly just say we're going to block any voting rights legislation through the Congress by a quiet compact. That quiet compact now is amongst GOP members of the Senate who say we will never allow, we'll use the filibuster to disallow any voting rights bills from coming to the floor of the Senate. This is the same thing. Richard Russell, and Strom Thurmond, and so many others did in the 1940s and 50s. They made a quiet compact amongst themselves. They don't give flowery speeches about it. They just agree to use their power to block the kind of legislation. So now that the Supreme Court, under John Roberts, has systemically, in 3 to 4 decisions, weakened the Voting Rights Act,
yes,
our only recourse is for Congress, as they've done in the past, to go back and repair the damage that the Supreme Court has done. We were successful in achieving that in the House of Representatives on 2 occasions within the last year. But once again, the Senate stood in the way of these necessary and meaningful reforms. And we cannot allow this argument to be anything other than understood as a deja vu all over again, as the legendary Yogi Berra said.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same tactic of the 1950s and 60s being used to thwart fair representation, equal participation in democracy, and the rights, hard-fought rights of African-Americans and other communities of color.
Yeah. I'm talking with Mark Morial. He's the president and CEO of the National Urban League, which just released its annual State of Black America report. It focuses pretty intently on voting rights, which is, I think, one of the most important frontiers right now in the fight for civil rights in America. Think of all of the rhetoric we hear about the need to secure the vote or the need to deal with voter fraud. Why are we hearing that right now? What's going on that's inspiring that kind of backlash? It seems,
you know,
certain
think,
that it is. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Things. I think Donald Trump's presidency, his rhetoric, his animation, his coddling of white supremacist movement actors, of people like David Duke, and his sanctioning in a very clever way of what occurred in Charlottesville, and his entire modus operandi to divide America into an us against them frame,
mm-hmm,
has elevated divisions in this country. Voting rights and democracy, 50 years was a bipartisan exercise. Republican president after Republican president, whether it was Nixon or Ford or Reagan or George Bush 43, all signed extensions of the Voting Rights Act. All passed through the Congress with significant support from both Democrats and Republicans. This is a change in course. This is what Americans have to understand. This is a change in course. And it simply appears as though some people believe that the route to power is to unlevel the playing field,
mm-hmm,
to make it more difficult for certain people to vote. And this is, when you analyze it, it is highly targeted. Gerrymandering is interesting. In places like North Carolina, for example, Texas and Georgia, Louisiana, notwithstanding the fact that black communities have been responsible for maybe 80 to 90% of the increase in the population of those states, the representation of African Americans in the state legislatures and the Congress is being diminished by the drawing of district lines. So, look, this is something that eyes open and it's clear as the sunshine on a beautiful day, or as clear as the dark clouds on a bad day. This is not anything other than an intentional effort. And it is interesting that this is taking place, you know, with the scepter of Trumpism, with the scepter of the 2020 election, and then January 6th. And now, where Vladimir Putin, the number one anti-democratic force in the world, has invaded Ukraine and sought to crush a democratic regime in favor of his totalitarian approach to leading people. So these issues, in my view, have a connectivity. And this is why, to be consistent, Americans must stand up, yes, for Ukraine and for its sovereignty and its independence and its right to democracy. But we have to do the same thing here at home, not just in words, but in deeds.
Yeah, yeah. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you think of the current state of voting rights, what you make of this assault on voter access and voter ease that we're seeing take place in many, many states around the country. What do you think is the solution? Do you think we need Congress to act? Do we need the courts to be more progressive and involved? Again, 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's start today with Tim in Detroit. Tim, what's on your mind?
Well, let me just say the Supreme Court hearing last week, they have this body of white guys question Ketanji Brown the way they did. This institution sanctioned slavery. They said black people were three-fifths human. It was really embarrassing and galling for them to do this black woman the way they did. That's an indication of how sick some of those people are.
Tim, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Mark Morial, I imagine that you watched those hearings with the same amount of appall and disgust, I guess, that a lot of other of us who are African-American did, that now Justice Jackson was treated the way she was by the Senate Judiciary Committee.
I think any decent person, any person understands that there's a line to be drawn on what I call tough questioning in a Supreme Court confirmation hearing. And people like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and Lindsey Graham, they crossed the line. They crossed the line in a significant and substantial way. So I think people should also celebrate the fact that notwithstanding that, soon to be Justice Jackson stood up with grace and dignity and handled those aspersions with great pride. I also think that the appalling nature of their questioning backfired on them. Her support in the polls, which had already been high, shot up. Mm-hmm. I think three Republican members, Romney and Murkowski and Collins, were probably so disgusted they didn't want to be associated with that kind of treatment. So I think we need to call them out. They turned a Supreme Court hearing into a cheap reality show circus.
Again, Tim, thanks for the call and the comments. Let's go to Sebastian in Plymouth.
I'm going to have to take one more call, and then I'm going to have to excuse myself.
Yeah, no worries.
One more interview,
No worries. Sebastian in Plymouth, go ahead.
No problem.
Hello. My name is Sebastian. I am a college student right now. Actually, I'm on my way to class. The reason that I called in was because I heard the conversation about voting rights and everything, and it reminds me of when the Supreme Court, it was only a 5-4 decision, but a very, very small majority of the Supreme Court decided to strike down a whole portion of the Voting Rights Act because they said, oh, it's no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about voting rights. It's also about tons of other issues. But, I think the Supreme Court has really overstepped their bounds, and when it comes to voting rights, along with tons of other issues, I think Congress should do something to take away their power, because it doesn't make any sense that a bunch of unelected bureaucrats has authority over the entire nation.
Yeah, yeah. The case you're referring to, Sebastian, of course, is Shelby, the case in which Chief Justice John Roberts, made the deciding vote to strike down that portion of the VRA. Mark Morial, before you have to go, talk quickly about what the solution is. Is it Congress? Yeah, go ahead.
I would wonder if John Roberts regrets that decision, because he was so wrong in believing that the Voting Rights Act is not needed. If you look at what's happened post the Voting Rights Act, that decision created destabilization, division, and racial division in the country. It is a decision that, in my estimation, will be seen in the same way we look at the Plessy decision and the Dred Scott decision as wrong decisions, fundamentally, morally wrong and inconsistent with the best interests of the nation. And, you know, the courts, the Supreme Court, you know, I think we're all looking at the Supreme Court. Is this Supreme Court going to be a Supreme Court that we look at and say they didn't uphold the Constitution? They didn't protect people's rights. They didn't stand up. They engage in political chicanery, in manipulating their role to strike down the Voting Rights Act, which had time and time been upheld, which was generally accepted and respected and followed. And they basically punched a hole in the side of the Titanic. Bad decision by the court, and a decision that I think eroded some of the standing of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So let me do this. I want to thank you for having me this morning.
Sure.
I'd love to come back again. Sorry I can't stay and take
your questions. Yeah, no worries.
But appreciate you and your voice. And good morning to the people of the great city of Detroit and southeastern Michigan.
Yes. Thank you so much for giving us the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up, we are going to talk about community, the communities that we live in, and how we become more agents of change for the good in those communities. Really interesting conversation coming up with John Corvino, who is the dean of the Irvin D. Reed Honors College here at Wayne State University, and Chase Cantrell, a Detroit-based attorney and founder and executive director of the nonprofit Building Community Value. Stay tuned for more Detroit Today.